Have you ever looked at a design mock-up and asked the creator to just, make it pop?
Oh, the dreaded phrase.
Yeah,
Okay.
but what if I told you that that really vague, super frustrating piece of feedback is actually driven by the exact same structural failure that causes multi-billion dollar AI systems to hallucinate?
It sounds completely wild when you put it like that.
It totally does. But welcome to the deep dive. Happy Friday, July 31st, 2026. We are absolutely thrilled you're joining us today because we are embarking on a bit of a mission.
We definitely are.
Yeah, we're unpacking this really comprehensive and frankly kind of mind-bending document titled the SMA Method Paper. And our goal today is to discover this missing layer of communication.
Right, this hidden gap.
Exactly. A gap that is secretly the reason why human projects fail, and bizarrely, why artificial intelligence just goes completely off the rails sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like a bold claim on the surface, right?
Sure.
Linking human miscommunication directly to artificial intelligence glitching out.
Totally.
But, once you actually look at the structural parallels outlined in this paper, I mean, the connection is completely undeniable.
Which is exactly why this matters to you listening right now. Whether you are prepping for a high-stakes product meeting, or maybe you're trying to figure out how to stop your company's new AI chatbot from, drifting off
Or
topic.
insulting your customers.
Right. Or if you're just completely frustrated by getting vague feedback from a client or a manager, this framework we're looking at today is basically the ultimate cheat code for clarity. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, so what's fascinating here is how the author proves that the exact same structural failure exists in a mundane client kickoff meeting and like inside a massive neural network.
It's wild.
And the author developed this theory over 25 years of active design practice. Like we're talking about working with massive clients.
Yeah, like Neo4j, Anthem, MetLife, 1-800-Dentist, right?
Exactly. And across all those years, across every single industry and, level of seniority, there was this one universal plague, one
Uh-oh.
piece of feedback that just haunted almost every single project.
I think anyone who has ever created anything for a client, whether it's like a slide deck or a full website, knows exactly what phrase you're about to say.
The dreaded, can you make it pop more?
Ugh. Literally the most frustrating three words in the English language. I mean, when someone says that to me, my instinct is just to assume they have absolutely no idea what they want. It just feels like bad communication.
Right. But the paper makes a brilliant observation about this, though. It argues that clients who say this aren't actually bad
I'm
communicators.
like, really? They're not.
No, they're accurately reporting an experience that they just don't have the vocabulary to name yet. Like they intuitively feel that something is structurally wrong with the interface.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but they literally lack the technical language to articulate the actual problem.
So the designer, lacking clear instructions, just starts guessing, right? Like they change background
Exactly.
colors, they make the logo 20% bigger, they add, drop shadows everywhere.
Exactly. Just throwing things at the wall.
Right. They throw visual elements at the wall because there is no shared language to bridge the gap between the client's feeling and the designer's execution.
And that gap is exactly where the SMA framework comes in. So SMA stands for signal, meaning action.
Okay, signal meaning action.
Got it. The core concept here is that most systems, whether we are talking about a human design agency or a really complex piece of software, they optimize for the raw input, which is the signal, and the final outcome, which is the action.
But they skip the middle step.
Precisely. They completely skip the meaning layer.
Okay, let me make sure I'm mapping this correctly. It's like a check engine light on your
Oh,
dashboard.
I like that.
Yeah, so the light turning on is just a signal. If a mechanic just looks at the glowing light on the dash and decides to replace the light bulb, which is in the action, without ever, plugging in their diagnostic computer to read the error code and find the meaning, they've missed the point entirely.
That is a perfect analogy. The car's still broken, you just can't see the warning anymore.
Exactly.
So let's look at how SMA actually solves the make it pop problem using that exact logic. In this framework, the client saying it doesn't pop is just the signal.
Right, it's the check engine light.
Exactly, it's unprocessed raw feedback. So we don't act on it yet. First, we have to decode the meaning.
Okay, but how do you do that? Like, how do you extract meaning from something so incredibly vague?
By diagnosing the structural failure. So, in the case of a design lacking pop, the meaning is almost always that the visual hierarchy is broken.
Oh, meaning the user's eye has no clear entry point on the page.
Yes, exactly. Everything is competing for attention equally, so literally nothing stands out.
Makes total sense.
And once you extract that meaning-broken visual hierarchy, the action becomes completely obvious. And most importantly, it becomes defensible.
Right, so what's the action then?
The action is increase the contrast between primary and secondary elements and establish a single dominant focal point.
Wow. So you stop guessing with random drop shadows and you fix the actual architecture of the page.
Exactly.
You know, if we connect this check engine light analogy to the digital interfaces we use every day, it seems like replacing the bulb instead of reading the code is basically the default state of the entire internet.
It totally is the default state.
Bam.
And it leads us directly into a massive problem with how we model user intent on the web today. Well, traditional web design basically glues the user interface, the surface of the site, and the information architecture together.
Just to clarify, by information architecture, you mean the structural skeleton of the site, right? Like how the pages are organized, the menus, the categories.
Yes, exactly. In traditional design, the surface and the skeleton are permanently fused. Mm-hmm. Everyone who visits a website gets the exact same navigation menu, the exact same page structure.
Which means the burden is placed entirely on the user.
Right. You are forcing them to dig through your complex architecture to find the specific thing they actually need.
So it's kind of like going to a restaurant where there is no menu. Instead, the waiter just points you toward the kitchen and says, "Our ingredients are in the fridge, our pops are on the stove, go ahead and construct your own dinner."
That is a great way to visualize the friction, yeah. And the paper notes that the rise of AI has completely collapsed this dynamic.
Oh, because AI does the cooking for you.
Right. Think about the search engine era. You queried Google, you got a list of links, and you had to do the effortful work of triangulating the truth by, you know, clicking through multiple sites.
And all that effort gave the system a lot of signal about what you wanted.
Exactly. But AI removed the navigation phase entirely. You ask a question, and an AI agent gives you one single confident answer.
It hands you the meal on a silver platter.
It does. But in doing so, it smooths over all the structural trade-offs and completely collapses the meaning layer. It basically just guesses what you want.
And that's where the trouble starts.
Exactly. So to fix this, the paper proposes a structural shift called the decouple.
The decouple. Okay. So we are separating the user interface from the information architecture.
Yes. The architecture stays completely intact underneath, but the surface dynamically adapts to the specific person using it. And to execute this decouple, the framework introduces experience avatars.
Experience avatars, like in a video game?
Kind of, but for UX design. Historically, you had Alan Cooper's personas, which describe who the user is.
Right.
Then you had Clayton Christensen's jobs to be done framework, which describes what the user wants to achieve right now. But for a long time, those were treated as parallel, totally disconnected frameworks.
Like two different departments working on the exact same product, but never talking to each other.
Precisely. So, experience avatars finally combine them into one computable structure. The framework calculates meaning by looking at three distinct variables: the user's identity, their environment, and their current state of mind.
Okay, identity, environment, and state. Ground this for me. Like, give me a concrete example of how tracking those three things actually changes a website interface in real time.
Sure. Think about a software developer visiting a complex database platform. A developer casually evaluating the product on a Tuesday afternoon to see if they want to buy it versus that exact same developer frantically debugging a broken piece of code at 2 a.m.
They are the same identity.
Right. But their environment and their state are wildly different. A static, traditional website treats them identically, which forces the panicked developer to wade through all this marketing fluff just to find the technical docs.
Oh, but an experience avatar adapts the UI to their state, so the technical docs get pushed to the front page automatically at 2 a.m.
Yes. Or think of a restaurant review app. If your active avatar is set to date night, the meaning of a good restaurant shifts.
Right. The interface would highlight ambiance, low lighting, maybe proximity to cocktail bars.
Exactly. But if your avatar shifts to remote worker, and you're looking at that exact same database of restaurants, the meaning changes completely.
So the interface reshuffles to surface, like Wi-Fi reliability, ambient noise levels, whether the tables have outlet access.
Exactly. Same underlying data, entirely different meaning.
Okay, I have to push back here, because anytime someone starts talking about dynamically tracking my environment and my state of mind to reshape my reality, major red flags go up for me.
Sure, totally understandable.
Isn't this just a rebranding of creepy corporate surveillance? Like, we're talking about hyper-advanced cookie tracking.
Well, this raises an important question, and the paper is remarkably explicit about its stance here. The framework argues that avatars actually sidestep surveillance capitalism into hidden cookies entirely.
Okay, how?
Because this is about transparent interpretation. Avatars enter the system in three very explicit, non-creepy ways. They are either seeded, declared, or mapped.
Okay, break those down for me. What does seeded mean?
Seeded means the product team hypothesizes the core avatars up front, based on broad audience research. They do this without tracking individuals at all.
Got it. And declared.
Declared means the user is in complete control. You literally click a toggle on the site that says, I am a remote worker, to shortcut the experience.
Right. Okay, I like declared. That gives me the steering wheel. But what about mapped? Because that one sounds a lot like tracking.
I get why it sounds like that, but mapped relies on entry signals, not persistent background surveillance.
What's an entry signal?
So if you click a social media ad that specifically advertises date night dining, the system simply maps that intent to your current session. It's just carrying forward the meaning from the message you already actively engaged with.
Okay, I hear you saying it's transparent, and mapping from an ad makes logical sense. But if I click one ad for date night, I really don't want every single website I visit for the next 3 weeks thinking I'm constantly trying to buy candles and wine. You know?
Right. Nobody wants that.
So how does it stop? Where is the boundary?
The boundary is the session itself. The mapped intent is ephemeral context for that specific interaction.
Oh, so it just forgets.
Yeah. It is not building a persistent shadow profile of your deepest secrets to sell to data brokers. It's simply holding the context of the conversation you are currently having with the interface.
Kind of like a good waiter remembers what you ordered for this specific meal, but doesn't like follow you to a different restaurant the next day.
Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it.
Okay, the session boundary makes a huge difference. That is a massive distinction between helpful context and stalking.
Totally.
So if human-facing websites need this distinct meaning layer to function without being confusing, it must be even more critical when machines are talking to machines.
Oh, absolutely. Moving from humans to machines exposes the defining crisis of modern AI development.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The author argues that AI hallucination-like, when a chatbot just confidently invents fake information and passes it off as fact, is actually the exact same failure as a client asking a designer to make it pop.
Yep, just on two different surfaces.
That is wild.
It is a brilliant synthesis. Look, in AI architecture right now, the industry standard for getting models to take action is something called the Model Context Protocol, or MCP.
Okay.
This is what allows an AI agent to use external tools.
And by tools, we mean giving the AI access to things outside its own brain, like letting it search the live web or query a private database or use a calculator.
Yes, external utility. But today's MCP moves directly from signal, which is whatever prompt the user types in, straight to action, which is executing the tool call. It skips the semantic contract entirely.
It's skipping the meaning layer. The check engine light gets swapped without reading the diagnostic code.
Precisely. And the consequences are severe. Because the AI model isn't handed a declared intent or identity through a structured meaning layer, it has to reconstruct who you are, what you want, and how the data relates to you from ambiguous surface-level signals on every single turn of the conversation.
Wow. So it has to rebuild the entire context of the universe every single time you hit enter.
Exactly. And because it lacks that stable foundation, it guesses.
Right.
And that guesswork, that compounding tower of rapid-fire assumptions layered on top of each other, that is what we call hallucination.
So how does the SMA framework actually fix the model?
By requiring a single, centralized meaning layer that produces three synchronized outputs simultaneously.
Three outputs?
Yeah. Whenever an intent is established, it generates the human UI that you look at, the agent response that the AI consumes to understand its role, and the structured data, usually in a format called JSON, that the machines index.
Let's pause on JSON for a second, because we hear that term thrown around a lot in tech.
Sure. JSON is essentially the raw data skeleton of the application. The UI is the colorful skin that human eyes read, but JSON is the structured, bare-bones text format that computers read to pass information back and forth.
Ah, okay. So if the colorful UI says one thing, but the JSON skeleton says another, the system fractures.
Exactly. But by forcing the UI, the JSON, and the AI's instructions to all generate from the exact same semantic source, accidental drift becomes structurally impossible.
Because the human and the machine are finally looking at the same reality.
Exactly.
Wait, I want to clarify something about the AI ecosystem, though. Don't we already have massive engineering frameworks dedicated to fixing AI memory and context? Like, I'm thinking of RAG retrieval augmented generation and newer systems like RAFRAG. Don't they solve this?
They are super powerful, but they solve entirely different parts of the equation. RAG retrieves factual documents from a database, so the AI isn't just reliant on its training memory.
Okay.
And GraphRAG maps the complex relationships between those different documents.
So Ara finds the restaurant menu, and GraphRAG maps out which ingredients belong to which dishes.
Yes. But neither of them declare your intent.
Oh, I see.
SMA is what declares the intent behind the query. They're complementary technologies.
Hmm.
You need RA to find the data, but you desperately need SMA to define the semantic contract so the AI stops guessing why you were asking for that data in the first place.
Right.
SMA tells the AI, look, I am a remote worker looking for a restaurant. Only weigh the facts that matter to that specific intent. It closes the interpretive gap.
That makes so much sense. So we fixed the AI and we've mapped the user intent. We have a perfect blueprint, but you know, none of that matters if the engineers actually coding the website are forced to skip this meaning layer just to meet a deadline.
And based on what the paper says, that's exactly what's happening in most development sprints right now.
Yeah.
This brings us to the operational reality of the tech industry, which the author calls the agility fallacy.
The agility fallacy.
Okay. Yeah. Modern software development usually operates in a hybrid stream of agile methodology. The entire corporate ecosystem is optimized for action cadence.
Like shipping fast, writing code, clearing tickets out of the project management software.
Exactly. But because of that relentless bias toward forward motion, the meaning layer gets completely abandoned.
Right, because design is often perceived as like a soft science or just visual decoration, right? So when timelines get tight, design is the very first thing that gets compressed.
Spot on. The team skips straight from a dev ticket, the signal, directly to writing code, the action.
Skipping the meeting.
Again. And the consequence is massive technical design debt. Features get shipped that function purely on a code level, but don't actually solve the core human problem because the semantic grounding was never done.
And what happens to the design systems? I mean, companies spend millions building these centralized libraries of buttons and fonts so everything looks consistent.
Oh, they become graveyards of inconsistent one-offs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because a developer rushing to clear a sprint ticket will just build a custom component rather than figuring out the semantic intent of the existing ones.
Wow.
So to protect meaning during execution, the SMA framework uses something called IPCs, or interaction pattern constraints. And these apply across four distinct UX levels. Rendered, execution, behavioral, and integrity.
Okay, that is a lot of terminology. Walk me through how these constraints actually work in practice. Let's start with the behavioral level.
Sure. Let's go back to our restaurant example. Let's say your date night avatar ranks a specific French bistro as the number one result.
Okay.
The meaning we need to convey to the user is emphasis. Now, a behavioral IPC is the rule that dictates how that emphasis is allowed to happen on the screen without ruining the experience.
Give me an example.
The constraint might dictate that emphasis must happen without layout shift.
Meaning the developer can't do something that makes the whole page jump around wildly when you click it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The developer can add a drop shadow, they can add a glowing border, but they are absolutely forbidden from changing the physical dimensions of the restaurant card.
Because doing that would force all the adjacent cards to reflow and jump down the page, which is super frustrating for the user.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense for behavioral. What about the integrity level? How does an integrity constraint work?
An integrity constraint ensures that the core truth of the data isn't compromised by the design.
How so?
Let's say a user views the site on a tiny mobile screen. The developer might need to hide a secondary button just to save space. An integrity IPC dictates that you can hide the decorative images, but you are absolutely forbidden from hiding the legal disclaimer or the total price, no matter how small the screen gets.
Ah, it preserves the semantic truth of the interface.
Oh, exactly.
You know, the paper actually mentions Brad Frost's atomic design methodology. Let me see if I can synthesize this.
Go for it.
If atomic design is the dictionary, giving us the raw words, the buttons, the structural components, then SMA is the semantic meaning behind what we actually want to say. And the IPCs are the grammar rules, ensuring we don't accidentally shout when we meant to whisper.
That is a brilliant synthesis. The component token tells you what the value is. SMA tells you what it means. and the IPC governs how it's allowed to behave.
And if any of the three are missing?
The system breaks.
So, okay, we've talked about AI architectures, design sprint fallacies, and interaction rules. But so what does this all mean for the bottom line? Because businesses run on revenue, not structural theory.
Oh, absolutely. Skipping the meaning layer costs companies unbelievable amounts of money, specifically in paid media and digital advertising.
Wait, how does a lack of meaning translate to lost money in advertising? Like, if I'm a business running Google Ads or Meta Ads, I'm just paying for clicks. If a user clicks my ad, they're interested. Where is the financial waste?
The waste comes from relying on the platform to do your strategic thinking.
What do you mean?
Meta and Google Ads often operate by throwing dozens of slightly different unmoored ad variations at a massive population. The algorithm watches the behavior to reverse engineer what the meaning might be based on who happens to click.
Oh, so you're just throwing expensive spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks?
Exactly. The paper calls this wasting spend to discover an audience. You are paying distribution networks premium rates to do the interpretive semantic work that should have happened in a strategy meeting before a single dollar was spent.
That makes total sense. So how does SMA fix that?
SMA flips this entirely. You define the avatar and the meaning up front. Then, instead of testing 10 random guesses, you test 3 distinct expressions of that exact same meaning.
How does that look in practice?
Say the meaning is that your software saves time. You test a direct version that says, say, 5 hours a week. You test a metaphorical version that shows a picture of an hourglass. And you test a confrontational version that asks, why are you still wasting your Friday afternoons?
Okay, they look different, but they're all rooted in the same avatar and the same semantic meaning.
Exactly. The ad platform's optimization engine still runs, but you are feeding it vastly superior inputs so it finds your audience faster and cheaper.
And this logic extends all the way through the company. I guess this is why the paper calls it a unified theory.
It proves that this isn't just a quirky trick for web designers, you know. It spans research, architecture, content, engineering, launch, and measurement.
It's all connected.
Right. The semantic target you seed in your initial strategy is the exact same target the ad is written for, which is the exact same intent the landing page dynamically reorders itself to serve.
Which is the exact same semantic contract the AI agent uses to avoid hallucinating.
Exactly. It is a unified coordination layer across the entire life cycle of a product.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here one last time. Listening to this, it sounds incredibly overwhelming. Like, if I am a CTO or a marketing director, do I have to burn down my entire tech stack, fire my vendors, and rebuild my databases from scratch just to get this meaning layer?
Not at all. And that's the strategic beauty of the framework. SMA is entirely protocol agnostic.
Really?
Yeah. You do not need a new content management system. You don't need to rebuild your backend architecture. You can begin with what the paper calls embedded modes.
Embedded modes.
It simply means utilizing the basic tagging structures your current systems already have. The semantic logic just travels with the web page's metadata. No database overhaul is required.
Oh, that's way less scary.
And once an organization masters that, they can slowly move towards semantic interfaces.
The paper describes those semantic interfaces as stateful layers. It's a bit jargon heavy. Does stateful layers mean the system actually remembers what you were doing 5 minutes ago rather than treating every single click like a case of amnesia?
That is exactly the distinction. The system builds a persistent context. But the broader point is, meaning can be built on top of what you already have. You start by constructing the semantic definitions, and eventually your existing systems just inherit them.
Wow. This has been an absolutely incredible journey through the SMA method paper. So to you, the listener, here is the ultimate takeaway from everything we've unpacked today. Whether you are evaluating $1 million ad spend, whether you are trying to give helpful feedback to a frustrated designer who just wants you to stop saying make it pop, or whether you are prompting an AI and getting back pure unhinged hallucinations.
Just pause.
Yes, always. Always pause between the signal and the action. Take a breath and define the meaning.
Because if you don't intentionally design that middle layer, the system will guess. And whether it's a human or a machine, it usually guesses wrong.
Absolutely. Now, to wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. Toward the very end of the paper, there's a brief mention of a concept called portable avatars.
Oh, yeah.
The idea that in the future, your base experience, avatar-like, your stable identity, your preferences, your contexts, could live inside a browser extension that you completely own, and it travels with you seamlessly from site to site.
It's wild to think about.
Think about that for a second. What happens when the entire internet stops being a collection of static, generic pages built for average demographics and instead becomes a singular, hyper-personalized neural net?
Yeah.
A web that reshapes itself the exact second you arrive, perfectly calibrated to your current state of mind. Are we moving toward an internet that reads us better than we read it?
It's a profound shift to consider.
Yeah.
And it completely redefines our relationship with digital space.
It really does. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it gave you some actionable clarity to take into your next project. Until next time, keep looking for the meaning behind the signal.